Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We focus on digging into the details so you don't have to. Today, we're looking at something fundamental in programming, making data last. Think about it, most data in a running program, it's just temporary, it lives in memory, RAM, and poof, gone when the application closes. So the big question is, how do we make information actually stick around? How do we get what we call persistent data storage? Well, that's our deep dive today, file handling. We're zeroing in specifically on how to read information from text files, and we're drawing from some really detailed software design and development booklets for this one.
Yeah, and it's hard to overstate how critical this is. I mean, if you're doing any kind of serious software development, you have to deal with files. That data in RAM, it's useful, but it's fundamentally fleeting. Files are what let us actually store data long-term, retrieve it later, even change it, gives our programs memory.
Right. So our mission for this deep dive, let's unpack the different ways you can open files, get data out of them, that's the reading part, and then importantly, close them properly. We'll go from simple stuff, like grabbing the whole file content at once, to more structured ways, like reading line by line into arrays, maybe even parallel arrays or arrays of records. And we'll be focusing, as you might guess, on the R mode for opening files, R for read.
Exactly. We're just reading today. There's a whole other side, writing data to files, often using the W mode, but that's a different topic. Knowing R is for reading helps set the stage, though. And maybe just to really hammer home why this matters, think about any app you use. A game saving your high score, a document editor remembering your text, that's all file handling. Without it, every time you close the program, boom, everything resets. It would be, well, pretty useless for most things. Files provide that essential persistence.
It really is like giving the program a memory, isn't it? Okay, so let's get practical. What are the first steps? How does our code actually connect to a file on the disk?
It's actually quite straightforward at the basic level. The first step is open. Think of it as your program saying hello to the file system. You need to tell it which file, so the file name, maybe something like emaillist.txt, and how you want to open it, the mode. For reading, like we said, that's R.
Okay, open the file, tell it we want to read, got it.
Then what? Then you use a method to actually read the content.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few ways to do this, which we'll get into. And then this is super important. Lots of beginners slip up here. You absolutely must close the file.
Close it. Why is that so critical?
Well, think of it like borrowing a library book. If you don't return it, maybe no one else can use it. Or worse, the librarian might think it's still checked out incorrectly. Closing the file tells the operating system, okay, I'm done with this now. It releases the file, prevents potential data corruption, maybe frees up resources, and ensures other programs or even later parts of your own program can access it reliably. It's just good practice.
Right, being a responsible coder. Okay, so our sources mentioned a really simple starting point, just reading the entire file contents into one variable. Can you walk us through that using maybe the emaillist.txt example?
Sure. This is often the first method people learn. You basically chain the commands .open, emaillist.txtr, then immediately call .read on that, and maybe even .close right after, though often you'd assign the open file to a variable first. What .read does is pull everything from the file, every character, every line break, and puts it into a single long string variable. So if emaillist.txt had names and emails, your variable now holds all of that as one big chunk of text.
Okay, simple enough. But I imagine that has its limits.
Oh, definitely. The sources point this out too. It's not normally much use for anything complex. Reading the whole file is great if you just want to, say, display a short readm file or load a very simple configuration, quick and easy. But imagine a huge log file, megabytes or gigabytes, loading all that into memory at once, not efficient. Or imagine the file has structure, like rows and columns. Trying to pick apart specific bits of data from one giant string variable is, well, it's a headache. You can do it, but it gets messy fast.
Right, like trying to find one specific sentence in an entire book just dumped into a single paragraph. So if reading the whole thing isn't always practical, what's the next step up for getting more control, especially with structured data?
This is where reading line by line comes in, much more manageable. Instead of one massive string, you can process the file one line at a time. A common way to do this after reading the content, or sometimes directly, is using a method like split lines.
Split lines. What does that do?
It takes that big string we might have gotten from .read, finds all the line breaks, and splits the string into a list or an array, depending on the language context, where each item in the list is one line from the original file. So if your emaillist.txt had 10 lines, split lines, would give you back a list containing 10 separate strings, suddenly you can loop through these lines, process them individually, much cleaner. The read file to array example shows this perfectly.
Okay, so now instead of one blob, we have a list of strings, each string being a line. That already sounds way more useful for structured data.
Exactly. It's a big step up.
Now, here's where I think it gets really interesting, based on the source materials. Lots of text files, especially things that look like spreadsheets saved as text, have multiple pieces of information on each line, separated by something, usually a comma. How do we handle that?
Yes, that's incredibly common. Think CSV files, comma, separated values, although it could be any delimiter, like a tab or a semicolon. For this, once you have a single line, maybe from iterating through the list we got from split lines, you use another string method, dot split.
Split, okay, how's that different from split lines?
Split lines breaks the whole file into lines, split, on the other hand, works on a single string, a single line in this case, and breaks that string into smaller pieces based on whatever delimiter you give it. So if a line looks like Smith, John J. Smith at example.com, and you call split on that line, it gives you back a list of strings. Smith, John, J. Smith at example.com. See? It broke the line apart at the commas.
Gotcha. So split lines gets the rows and split gets the columns within each row.
Precisely. And this is where the idea of parallel arrays comes in, as mentioned in the sources. You read a line, split it into parts. Then you take the first part, like the surname, and append it to an array called surnames. You take the second part, first name, and append it to an array called first names, and the third, email, to an emails array.
And you do that for every line of the file.
Exactly. So after processing the whole file, you end up with multiple arrays, surnames, first names, emails, where the item at index 0 in each array belongs to the first person, the item at index 1 belongs to the second person, and so on. They run in parallel.
Okay, I can totally see how that works for something like the peopledetails.txt task mentioned in the activities. You'd have arrays for ID, name, mark, whatever, and then you could easily say, print a nice table or find the highest mark by looking across the corresponding elements.
Absolutely. That structure makes tasks like displaying formatted tables or finding specific data points much, much easier. The relationship between the data is maintained by the shared index across the arrays.
And the sources mentioned using zip and format strings for displaying that neatly.
Yeah, zip is fantastic for this. It lets you iterate over multiple arrays simultaneously, so you can pull out the name, ID, and mark for the same student in each step of a loop. Combine that with formatted printing, like using f-strings or the dot format method with alignment specifiers, and you can create really professional-looking tabular output right in the console.
Okay, parallel arrays seem powerful, but you also mentioned something even more structured. Arrays of records. What's the step up there?
Right. Parallel arrays are great, but sometimes, especially with more complex data where each thing you're storing has lots of different attributes, maybe of different types, strings, numbers, booleans, it can be cleaner to group all the information for one entity together. That's where records come in. Think of a record like a custom data structure. In Python, you'd often use a class to define it. So using the city example from the sources, you might define a city class that has attributes like .name, .country, .population, .language.
So instead of separate lists for names, countries, populations, you create a sort of blueprint for a city.
Exactly, a blueprint. Then when you read a line from your file, say London, UK, 900000 English, you split it just like before. London, UK, 900000 English. But instead of appending these to four different arrays, you use these parts to create a new instance of your city class. You make a city object where its .name is London, its .country is UK, and so on. You might need to convert the population string to an integer, of course.
Okay. And then you store that whole object.
Yes. You append that single city object, which now contains all the related data bundled together, to a single list or array, maybe called cities. So you end up with one array where each element is a complete city record.
What's the main advantage of doing it that way? It sounds a bit more complex to set up.
It can be, initially, but the payoff comes in organization and clarity, especially for complex operations. If you want to sort your cities by population, you just sort the city's array using the .population attribute as the key. All the other information for each city, name, country, language, automatically stays with the correct population because it's all part of the same object. Searching is often cleaner, too. You're dealing with meaningful objects, not just parallel indices. It encapsulates the data much more effectively, which generally leads to more maintainable and understandable code, especially as the complexity grows.
That makes sense. Bundling related things together. Okay, one last point of clarification. We've mostly said text files, but people often talk about .csv files separately. You touched on this. How similar or different are they from Python's reading perspective?
It's a great question because it trips people up. Fundamentally, a .csv file is a text file. CSV just stands for comma-separated values. It implies a structure tabular data with commas separating the fields.
So the .csv extension is more like a convention telling humans and some programs, hey, expect commas as delimiters here.
Pretty much, yeah. The key difference is that expectation. But for basic reading in Python, like we've discussed, using open reading lines, using split, the code is often exactly the same whether the file ends in .txt or .csv, assuming the .csv file actually uses commas as separators.
Wow. So you don't necessarily need a special CSV library for simple cases.
For simple cases, often no. Now, dedicated CSV libraries are very useful for handling complexities like commas inside corded fields, different delimiters, or handling headers automatically. But for straightforward comma-separated data, the basic text file reading techniques work surprisingly well. Just change the file name and you're open.
That's actually really useful to know. Good demystification there. Okay, what a tour. We went from realizing data disappears from RAM, needing persistent storage.
Right, the core problem.
All the way through opening, reading, closing. We saw how reading the whole file is simple but limited. Then using split lines to get individual lines into an array.
Much better for structure.
Then using split flight on each line to populate parallel arrays, which is great for tabular data.
Super common technique.
And finally, the more object-oriented approach, using arrays of records or classes for even better organization. Mastering these gives you, well, a huge amount of power over data.
Absolutely. And maybe here's a final thought to leave you with. Now that you have a handle on how to read the structured data from files, think about the sheer volume of data available out there. Consider public data sets like the ones mentioned from statistics.gov.scot or opendata.nhs.scot in the UK, or similar portals worldwide. They contain vast amounts of information on demographics, health, the economy. Being able to write a program to read, parse, and analyze that data, that's not just a technical skill. It's the first step towards uncovering trends, maybe finding insights into societal issues, or even building tools that use that public data to provide real value. This basic file reading skill. It's your key to unlocking and making sense of a world of information.